Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrease.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
Doing the little things right.
Details matter.
Governor Rauner is up to today in the state of Illinois. Good morning. It's the Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. We talk about this intermittently with Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, and he will be with us today. Governor Rauner is to sign a bill clamping down on illegal gun trafficking. He'll also sign a bill to offer further assistance to juvenile offenders. And to recognize domestic workers' rights in the state of Illinois. That doesn't mean those who are from the country. It means housekeepers and people like that. So it guarantees them one day off a week. So
Domesticians? Is that the right?
domestic engineer? Is that the PC term?
I don't know.
So we'll talk to Ben about that and figure out why Illinois, being the latest to jump on this expanded domestic workers' rights, it's just smoke with no heat there. This is, several states have adopted this in response to one terrible person. I believe in Minneapolis, Minnesota, is where they started. They aren't domestic engineer or domestic workers' rights when you have to get the police involved to bring charges against someone who was essentially detaining a woman against her will and abusing her. All right, that's abuse. That's illegal.
That's not a job.
If you're here illegally and someone does that to you, that's still not legal. That's still illegal. There are human rights that aren't necessarily the rights of citizens and so forth. Mm-hmm. There are differences, but anytime you falsely imprison someone or abuse them, that's a crime no matter whether they're here legally or illegally.
Sure.
So you don't need this kind of thing, in my mind, to sort of double down on this aspect of it.
So this is just political gamesmanship, is what?
I think so, but we'll talk to Ben Yao coming up in just about half an hour. It's one of those things where government looks good because they're issuing this sort of, you know, feel-good proclamation.
Look at what we did.
When really it's just wasted time and ink. I want to say I almost said on parchment, because on Sunday night I watched was it 2 hours or was it just that good? It was at least an hour, maybe longer. It was a PBS special on the House of Lords, House of Commons, Westminster Abbey, the whole history and structure there in London at Parliament. Mm-hmm. And really kind of, they took you into areas that you can't even go to on the tour and things like that. It was very interesting. That building is genius. I mean, the engineering that went into it, it was essentially the first forced air heating and cooling system.
Oh, okay.
Just from that angle and the way that it's laid out with its structure. It also, I didn't know this, I figured it came from somewhere, but it's also the building that gave rise to the political term lobbyist, because anyone from the public could go into the lobby between the two houses and meet with your representative there and push for your agenda or have your issue heard. And so they were only allowed in that lobby. So if you met there, you were a lobbyist, and that's where it came from.
Right. But the professionalizing of it, maybe that's not the right way to turning it into a job.
Mm-hmm. I think professionalizing is the perfect term.
Did that occur at the House of Commons, or is that an American invention?
I don't know. They didn't get into that. But I would imagine, you know, politics has a deep, violent history of being played for keeps in Europe. So I would imagine that at some point, somebody figured out, hey, you know what? I'm really, what did you say yesterday about how I'm really good at convincing other people to do what I want them to do?
Yeah.
So you know what? You give me a few farthings and I'll go meet with Lord Muckety Muck and see if I can't get him to vote for X.
Yeah. Or I'll stand in front of the people.
Right.
And use my skills to sway the masses.
Right. So I just thought it was interesting. If you're into that stuff, check it out. I thought it was, sure, was well worth the time.
You don't even have to be a Downton Abbey fan.
No, you don't. Now, there were none of those references there. This is a strict historical
English thing is all I was connecting it to.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe this will spark more people's love for the EPL. Who knows?
Let's hope so.
Several things to be aware of as you go forward toward Election Day. Normally, I don't worry too much about mainstream media bias. We'll talk about it with Craig now and again, just on things to watch out for. Jim Hoff loves to point it out. He was with us yesterday here on the morning meeting. If you missed any of it, you can get the podcast at WTAD.com or wherever you get your podcasts. But so many things happened in a very short time with the mainstream media's either willful participation or willful motivated ignorance that I thought it was time that we take a look at a couple of these things. Okay. And everything has happened, everything that's about to be brought up has happened in the last 36 hours. So this is immediacy. You know what went on with Olympian Ryan Lochte being the ugly American abroad.
Mm-hmm.
The Huffington Post has decided that since Lochte apologized for his behavior and that Donald Trump last week gave the off-the-cuff apology for occasionally hurting people's feelings, that they're together.
Wait a minute.
They are painting. This is what's happened. The liberal media has realized that most Americans had a visceral negative reaction to Ryan Lochte's behavior.
So let's staple Trump to Lochte.
They are trying to interweave Lochte into the Trump motif in order to bring your correct negative reaction to Lochte's behavior and sort of like Play-Doh. You could stretch it out, press it onto something, and then it would have the image on it.
Silly putty.
Yes. Okay, silly putty, not Play-Doh. Thank you. It's transference. Mm-hmm. You could do that. So they're trying to do this in order to put another albatross around the Trump campaign. You have this going on at Huffington Post, which shouldn't be a big surprise that they are not even playing the role of indifferent media. They are an advocacy site.
Certainly.
To the hilt. So this is going on right now. What was the line that they minted? Lochte lied. That guarantees him a position on Trump's communication team. I mean, that's how blatant that this has been.
Wow.
Then you have...
That's a dangerous game to start playing.
Yes, it is. Then you have a New York Times columnist calling for Google to fix, not fix as in repair, but fix as in put forth only particular results for a search and not the top hits for searches concerning Hillary Clinton's health.
Yeah, this was, who was this, did you say it was?
This is the New York Times columnist. Yeah, New York Times columnist.
Tech person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Democrats have dismissed claims that she is in bad health as conspiracy theories and misinformation. But Farhad Manjoo, M-A-N-J-O-O, has called on Google to step in, say, quote, "We shouldn't have to give quarter to conspiracy theorists. Google should fix this and stop returning any information or links that could negatively impact opinions of Hillary Clinton."
Pay attention to that. They want the scrub. They want,
yes.
They want, hey, I don't know if Manjoo has any sway at Google. I can't imagine that he does. I mean, if I'm Google and some tech guy at the New York Times is like, you should scrub the internet of these things.
I don't think he has that much power, but the chief tech guy at the New York Times probably has a little professional sway.
People at Google probably will read
I would think so.
What he puts out there, but if I'm Google,
right?
I don't think you can publicly acknowledge that.
No, I would hope not. The third thing on the poo-poo platter of mainstream media involvement, George Stephanopoulos. This is a guy that we
served
have
in
been
the Clinton
familiar with for quite some
White
time.
Mm-hmm.
So you might wonder, served in Bill's White House, mm-hmm. would he be tough on Hillary or the Clinton Foundation?
No.
Well, now hold on. He actually did put quite a few pointed questions at the Clinton Foundation manager in an interview that he did on Sunday, but then, during his air of righteous indignation, forgot to mention that he himself has donated almost six figures to the Clinton Foundation.
He has helped out.
Yo, helped out. Helped out is like when a buddy needs to borrow your truck for a few minutes.
Well,
six-figure donations, that's a little more than helping out.
When Stephanopoulos has not been even handed in the past concerning, and I don't want to say it was back during the primary, it was back during Hillary Bernie days, that it was pointed out that he had made several contributions to the Clinton Foundation mm-hmm. over the years. So that's out there. People shouldn't be surprised by that, as closely tied as he is to that, political family. I don't know that he gets, maybe he does go to birthday parties. I don't know. But he is, he's family as far as the Clinton political machine goes. So the fact that he gave to that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody.
The surprise to me is the ongoing charade or charade, however you'd like to pronounce it this Tuesday morning, that a major news corporation in ABC expects, or at least is willing to present the veneer of Stephanopoulos being able to act as an unbiased journalist when it comes to the family that he has served so willingly and so well.
But he's not the only one.
No.
There are other, we've talked about this before, there are other uncomfortable ties to the current administration, to the Clinton administration. Dana Perino plays a prominent role, but she's involved on programming at Fox. Mm-hmm. The late Tony Snow. I guess he did it backwards. He went from Fox at his own talk show to press secretary. So he did it in reverse. But this is the kind of stuff where we brought it up when Roger Ailes got involved with Trump's campaign. Are you comfortable?
He went from chairman to now in the campaign.
Are you comfortable? But can Ailes make a phone call to Fox and still have people in there go, okay, I get what you're saying?
Well, we all network. I mean, it would certainly be easier for us to pick up the phone to a place where we were formerly employed and get something done than to a place where we've never been.
Sure. So, that's if we're going to poo-poo Stephanopoulos, and I'm not against it, have some poo-poo, George. He's not the only one.
No, he's not the
only
one.
It's all over the place.
He's not the only one, but he was the only one who on Sunday presented this sort of supposedly perceived harsh critique of the Clinton Foundation without revealing the fact that he is a major player, or at least a supporting role player in that very foundation that he was trying to ride the high horse against.
And this comes back to,
and by the way, Dana Perino was always very upfront.
Yes,
about fact that she was in the Bush White House.
I say journalistic ethics. You're upfront about those things from the outset,
mm-hmm.
before you get into it with people, so that everybody knows that you're above board. Because if you don't, and then people find out about it after the fact, it looks kind of shady. So, but the other end of it is, do we not have journalists who can come up on their own these days and are good enough to rise to these positions? Or do we prefer people coming from political appointed positions and then coach them up on how to perform in front of the camera or behind the microphone? That's the part that I think we should be concerned about.
I think that would be an interesting experiment to see if somebody wants to take that on. Those were three willful participations of media bias just in the last 36 hours. This one was interesting to me because of the willful ignorance that was displayed. You may not have heard about this because the mainstream industrial media complex decided you didn't need to hear about this. A violent mob terrorized Donald Trump donors over the weekend at a fundraiser held at the Minneapolis Convention Center.
Mm-hmm.
Trump supporters were punched, spit on. Others were pelted by garbage from an angry anti-Trump, anti-American mob. I say anti-American because the mob themselves were screaming F the USA while burning an American flag. You also saw peppered in, according to reporters at the scene. Now, this wasn't an overall motif, but you saw obviously peppered in signs of Hillary support from shirts to stickers and so forth there. So these are people obviously who have a message. They are obviously motivated by a willingness to tear down anyone's opinion that isn't theirs. And yet this is, you know what, nothing to see here.
I think, I think Jim mentioned it briefly yesterday.
Well, I think Jim would take it as a compliment that I don't think he is part of the mainstream industrial media complex.
No, he's not. Not now.
All right, coming up this morning on The Morning Meeting, Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, joins us in just a bit. And next, more anti-capitalist planning and why your price at the pump may be about to skyrocket on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
You're now ready for the season.
I'm not. I was not prepared.
Coming up on Friday night right here. Blue Devil football on our sister station, as you just heard. And then Quincy Notre Dame Raiders taking on Hannibal. Hannibal looked good against Helias last week in that win. Looked good. That's going to be a tough kickoff for the Raiders.
Three or four wins over Helias in a row. Three, isn't it?
It's at least
three. I think they beat him twice last year.
Yeah, that's... Man, Raiders and Coach Cannell, they got their work cut out for them coming up Friday night. Tim Kinscherf will have it all for you right here on Talk
and
Radio 930 WTAD. You're going to escort him over to 10th and Jackson,
10th and Jackson,
right?
Yeah. Well, I think he's comfortable that way.
All right. Sounds good. Be on the lookout for a price jump at the pump. Not next week and not next month even, but in the long-term future. Apparently, states are looking at how Louisiana, in the wake of this flooding, they're also battling the fact that every year they lose more than 20 square miles of land to the Gulf of Mexico. These energy projects that were put together in the 50s, 60s, and 70s are now in danger of being destroyed because when they were designed, they were protected apparently by a marsh that was there, a naturally occurring marsh. And now because of the loss of land, because that whole area is below sea level.
Mm-hmm.
So the sea is, and this is what drives me crazy. Anti-capitalist, anti-energy opinions and groups and forces are trying to pin this on the energy industry. Don't you know enough about what's going on just geologically?
The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution.
So they're trying to pin the cost for reclaiming the coastline on the major energy corporations. They're looking for $100 billion from, quote, big oil. That's all your oil companies from Chevron and Exxon, all these sorts of people, in order to, quote, reclaim their coastline. Why don't you just sue the Gulf of Mexico? Because it's the one taking it. Not big oil. Big oil is losing their investment.
Right.
Because it's going down as well.
Sure.
And they already pay an enormous fee to the state for the rights to pursue this. The state is supposed to be using that money. That's not just free strippers and dom money. That's the money that you use then to support these infrastructure necessities. It's been mismanaged by the states.
Yeah, if
you don't come back and try to rob Peter twice.
If I'm the state of Louisiana, if I'm any of these people, I turn around and look at the companies and say, look, we're losing ground to this body of water. If you want to be able to maintain what you've got, you're going to have to shore up your boundaries. But that cost is going to have to be on you. Because what have we learned? If you all of a sudden run it through a middleman, being the government, it's not going to get done, A, on time, B, correctly.
C, and efficiently.
Efficiently. And none of those things will benefit, you know, the corporation, who are the ones who need it there in the first place. So if you just let them take care of it, everything will get handled in a much more, words, efficient way.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on this as it goes forward. This hasn't been talked about much because of the disaster and how many hundreds of thousands of people it has impacted throughout Louisiana. The president might not know. He hasn't gotten done playing golf just yet to get down there. Candidate Trump has already been down there, did some work, met with people, made a major donation in order to help that situation. So we'll see. This is something that I think if it wasn't for the human calamity that is ongoing right now, would be getting a brighter spotlight, because to me, this reads as state entities mismanage enormous fees for energy exploration, turn again and try to rob capitalists. I mean, that's the headline.
That's what they do. Yeah. How is this different from yesterday?
So you can present
or last week.
You can present it a million different ways, but when it boils down to it, it's mismanagement on behalf of governments at the state, local, and federal level, as well as your inability to realize where you're at. You are below sea level. You made the choice to set up permanent. There's a reason insurance here, even this far north on a floodplain, costs way more than it does if you're not in a recognized floodplain. Mm-hmm. You made the choice to build there. You made the choice to continue there. You made the choice to invest there. That's up to you, but there are risks that come with it. Stop turning around and looking at the rest of the taxpayer base in the country because you made a high-risk choice and got called on it by Mother Nature.
Right, and that's risk-reward, and that seems something that we have an aversion to these days. Nobody can be allowed to fail,
right,
to lose, so that has to be covered by government. No, that's not the case. This is what happens in the world. You take a chance. Sometimes it pays off. Sometimes the Gulf of Mexico gets you.
And sometimes Ben Yount may or may not be wearing pants. We'll find out next on The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
This is Dennis Miller, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting here on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
Get a move on before I excommunicate you. It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sometimes you have to bring the hammer. Sean Seacrey, Quade. Well, we had a loiterer here in the show, and I will not abide that. We do not have an open borders policy here from 10 to 11 in the WTAD studio.
Am I gonna miss? Is she was malingering? Mal-lingering?
I like it. A guy who has been accused of other various forms of, well, we'll let you make that.
No, that's not what you
that line
doing.
In your head. It's Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us here this morning on The Morning Meeting. Ben, what are all the things you've been charged with?
Never convicted. Never convicted. We must set the record straight. A charge, you can charge anyone.
Yes.
You have to convince a jury of your peers. 12 good men and women who see the justice in this world.
Ben Yount, charged but never convicted. this morning on the morning meeting. As we were kind of getting the program rolling this morning, we mentioned doing the little things right. You have brought this up as the preferred role of government, especially here in Illinois, and that's what we're seeing right now. Governor Rauner is about to sign a bill to clamp down on illegal gun trafficking, a bill to assist juveniles who may need help before turning into lifelong recidivists. I mean, these are just the little things. Illinois becoming the latest state to expand domestic workers' rights. These are just the little things, but are they even worth the time it takes to do them in the face of the mounting fiscal calamity that we have here in the state of Illinois?
The realist in me, the reporter, the journalist that spent the better part of a decade covering Illinois government, my gut reaction is, you're right, that, hey, it's great that we're taking some of these strides. I mean, I, like most Illinoisans, I think, couldn't wait for the moment that we could legally shoot a catfish with a bow and arrow, but it doesn't matter if there's not going to be a state to come back to. But I think that, I really think, to put the jokes aside, particularly these criminal justice reform measures, we can't lose sight of, while almost all of the rest of the state has fallen apart, well, this is a state that can't pay its bills, that criminally underfunds its schools, we have done, in a time of hyper-partisan bickering, some amazing work to make the criminal justice system work a little bit better. And we can all agree, you know, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, that there were some real problems in how Illinois administered justice. And the shame of it is, the real shame of it, is that Illinois has done such amazing work in reforming our criminal justice reform. I mean, yesterday the governor signed a dozen pieces of legislation. Now anyone under 15 has to have a lawyer. When you read that headline, you're like, wait, you mean cops were questioning 14-year-old suspects without a lawyer present, or their parents, or any adult in the room? We've done some amazing work on criminal justice reform. The sad part is that it all gets overshadowed by all of the failures that Illinois government has, you know, dealt to its citizens over the past couple of years. So, yes, I think it's amazing that we're doing some of these little things right. The unfortunate part is that when we get the big things wrong, it casts such a large shadow that we can't appreciate the handful of things that we've actually done pretty well on here in the state.
Is this part of the turnaround agenda that the governor thinks that he can get bipartisan support for and at least get these things accomplished so that when, you know, the entree comes, we can get the little stuff out of the way, or the things that they do agree on out of the way and get to the meat of it?
I think that there are two ways to look at this, and I don't know that one is more cynical than the other. I think that you have a little bit of the political gamesmanship here, right? If you can find agreement with Chicago Democrats on some of these criminal justice reforms, then it's a lot easier to go back to the same Chicago Democrats when you need a vote on education reform, pension funding, or some of the more contentious issues, building relationships. The Illinois Capitol may be made out of stone and steel, but it is a building built on relationships. So there is some political gamesmanship going on, and I might as well get you on board with something as opposed to having you oppose me with other things. But this is one of the interesting things that has kind of crept in. You know, the Illinois Policy Institute did this survey, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and there is overwhelming 70% support for changing the criminal justice system here in Illinois. That, I mean, you're seeing almost majorities of Republicans say, yeah, we've got to figure out a different way to deal with criminals. So I think there is some of this, hey, let's get some easy victories, let's agree so that politically it's easier to agree down the road. I really do think that this is part of the new conservative agenda. And whether you come to criminal justice reform because it's really expensive to lock somebody up, costs $23,000 a year to lock somebody up in prison, or you are coming to criminal justice reform because you really don't think we need to put everybody who has a joint in prison, you're coming to the same point, and you're seeing that. And hopefully what we can get to, for people who are conservative, and I say this all the time, you know, prison, jail, should be for the people who are truly dangerous. the people who are a threat to their community. Let's stop locking up people just because we want to get tough on crime. Then we have more beds for the truly dangerous, the people who shoot, rob, stab, sex offenders, you know, those who have proven that they don't deserve to be with the rest of a law-abiding society. When we have room for them in our prisons and our jails, then we can put them, you know, in prison and jail.
Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning on The Morning Meeting. Ben, this is the first day for most public schools around the state of Illinois. Hysteria was staved off, at least momentarily, with the stopgap budget agreed upon in Springfield. Is there any repercussion that you're hearing about or seeing today on this sort of back-to-school commemorative day? Or are we going to have this at semester when that stopgap budget runs out?
I think that there is general consensus to go all year. And the stopgap budget ends in January, but schools will be taken care of through pretty much the end of the year. At least that's what every single lawmaker that I talked to at the fair said. Now, will the rest of the state be taken care of? I think you've seen Speaker Madigan double down, triple down, quadruple down on his opposed Governor Rauner at every step rhetoric. So, if I'm a public school, I'm worried just because I'm a public school in Illinois, and you always should be worried. But if you are a social service provider, now is the time to panic. If you are anyone else who depends on the state of Illinois for money, now is the time to start to panic, because this may be as good as it gets. Public schools, you cannot continue to live on the edge. Anyone who has ever lived paycheck to paycheck in their own life, whether you do it now or you did it for a few weeks or a few months or a few years, you know that eventually when you're living on that edge, things go wrong and you get behind and you can't catch up, or there is just this terror that exists in sitting here on Wednesday and you've got enough food for 2 days and you don't get paid for five. That is a terrifying feeling, and schools are there. You're seeing this with all of their other payments, that they'll keep the doors open, but what about school lunch costs? They're still waiting to figure out exactly how much they'll get for school buses. It is a tough time financially, and there are, I want to say, about 20-something schools. Yesterday was the day that schools had to finalize what referenda they would put on for the November ballot, and in this state, in this day and age, with this mood of the voters, you're going to have districts who desperately need a new gym or a new roof, but they're terrified about going to voters this fall and asking, because there is such an anti-establishment, anti-incumbent, anti-government tone flowing through the electorate. I'm glad that I'm in radio and not public education in the state of Illinois.
Ben Yount, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. You talk about the anti-tone. Governor Rauner says that per the generals coming up in November, he wants to get an infusion of money on the Republican side. Was it yesterday or was it the day before? He said that he wanted to equal what the Democrats are spending, if not outspend them. Does he have the juice to make that happen? Or are the Democrats going to amp it up even further?
The governor can go dollar for dollar. The governor can go dollar for dollar. Now, the governor and his people can go dollar for dollar and then some. This is, by the way, the entire seismic shift in Illinois politics. That it is not that Governor Rauner has such, to quote Mike Madigan, extreme ideas. It is not that this governor for the first time is talking about right to work or limiting pensions. All of these are ideas that have been bandied about before. Bruce Rauner has enough money and has connections to other people who have enough money to now compete, to go on television, to send out direct mail pieces. That for years and years and years, because Democrats relied on public employee unions and other parts of organized labor that are just cash cows for them, you know, the Democrats could essentially outspend everyone in the election. And what Governor Rauner has done is he's taken away that instant advantage. Now you have in southern Illinois actual commercials running against John Bradley or Gary Forby, or we're running against Brandon Phelps, lawmakers who for the first time in questionable districts really have to defend themselves. You would have seen this on the air in Quincy had John Sullivan run for re-election. You have a Democrat in what is a pretty conservative part of the state, And he just never really had any real competition. Maybe somebody ran against him, but they never had the money or the organization. Now, every Republican in a target district has that money, has that organization, and it is forcing Mike Madigan to defend his territory. And that is, as we've said here a million times before, that's Mike Madigan's job number one. Maintain a Democratic majority in the Illinois House of Representatives, and everything else follows. And so now this governor is poking the bear with the stick, trying to take away that majority, which is one of the reasons why you are seeing such nasty fights so early. And if this is what it's like in August, my God, October is going to be brutal.
Yeah, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, of all places, ran over the weekend, I believe it was, a flashback piece. 1983, Mike Madigan, Speaker of the House, where were you? He's still in that same spot. So I thought that was an interesting look by an established paper news source that usually isn't willing to poke those kinds of situations. Now, they were doing it sort of tongue-in-cheek as a historic piece, but that did bring up in a year of anti-establishment rhetoric and voter turnout, it does bring up sort of the ultimate establishment talking point, with the caveat being, of course, that we don't get to vote statewide on Michael Madigan. He wins in his district and then remains Speaker of the House. But I thought that was an interesting piece.
This is going to be, there are several subplots, and this is the difficulty with the Twitterverse, is that you really don't get to the subplots till much later. But this could be the end of Democratic representation in several traditional Democratic spots. I mean, Jill Tracy looks like she's going to take John Sullivan's seat. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but Gary Forby in Southern Illinois, John Bradley in Southern Illinois, these are old FDR, blue-collar union Democrats, farm areas that have voted Democrat since the dawn of time, and they may not. They may get a Republican representative. And once you get a Republican, I don't think they'll change back. Because, again, you know, if I'm a Democrat in 2016 and I live in Rushville, or if I live down in Anna Jonesboro, and I look at Hillary Clinton and transgender bathrooms and social justice warriors and a bunch of elite East Coast, you know, college professors, I don't know where the hell I fit in that party. But you could see a seismic shift to where the Democratic Party in Illinois is only in Chicago, with some tentacles into the suburbs, and then everything south of I-80 is solid, not just red, but conservative red. And that's going to change the balance of power. It's certainly going to change representation for those areas. This is a really interesting year. But again, just like with criminal justice reform, everything gets drowned out with the drumbeat Mike Madigan versus Bruce Rauner, you know, Democrats versus Republicans, good versus evil, all of it. And so we're not going to get to some of those really interesting, I didn't realize that, moments till probably after the November election.
Ben Yount with us this morning on The Morning Meeting. Ben, last week we had a guest check in from the governor's ham breakfast at the Missouri State Fair, said there were Trump-Pence signs all over the place. You were at the Illinois State Fair. Was there Trump-Pence signage all over the place? And if not, what was there?
There was one man with one Trump sign, and he was politely asked to move. Not politely asked in the sort of, he's going to move that sign or mine is going to have to move you. He was legitimately, hey, guy, I understand we get it, but this is not for that. You would have thought that Mark Kirk was the most popular politician in all of Illinois based on the signage at the Illinois State Fair. I talked to Matt Murphy, the retiring has resigned lawmaker from the suburbs, and he said, listen, Donald Trump is going to turn people out in certain districts. And I talked with the Republican Party chairman, Tim Schneider, county chairman up and down the state. And in some counties, in some areas, Donald Trump is going to bring out thousands of new voters. The trick is to get those Donald Trump voters to not just vote for Trump and go home, but to vote for Trump and their local Republican. But in the suburbs, where Mark Kirk is going to be reelected, where a lot of the statewide offices are won or lost, Donald Trump doesn't play very well. He may play well in some pockets, but he doesn't play well in a lot of the broad swath of the suburbs. Now, the question, because I've heard this spin, and I'm sure you've heard this spin as well, is that Trump is the Targaryen of this race, that people secretly support him, they just don't want to say, and that as soon as they get into the ballot box, they will vote Trump, and you know, he will win. I don't know so much about that. But, yeah, Missouri, Donald Trump plays really well. Suburban Chicago, Naperville, Donald Trump doesn't play well at all. And I think that you've got to give the Republicans some credit that they allow their people to have that freedom. Democrats don't do that. Democrats aren't going to sit here and say, well, yeah, you can bash Hillary down here and go vote for her up there. There is much more of a unified mindset, an enforced lockstep, often in Democratic politics.
So did Mark Kirk mistakenly find a spine when he called Obama drug dealer in chief, or is this just another misstep of speech from the guy who once said about Republican senator and presidential candidate Lindsey Graham that he was a bro with no hoe?
I don't want this to sound insulting, but I really think that since the stroke, there's some wires that just don't line up. I don't think that this is a move by Mark Kirk to get tough on Obama. I still don't think that his voters want him to call the president drug dealer in chief. Listen, if he's given an interview to Breitbart or to you or to me or to half the conservative outlets in this country, yeah, dude, that is Big Mac and fries. But when you're talking to the State Journal Register in Springfield and their editorial board, that is the gaffe of all gaffes. But I did see something in Cap Facts yesterday where Kirk's own people say, yeah, sometimes he gets a little overwhelmed. Sometimes in situations like that, he has trouble hearing, or you know, he just speaks off the cuff. I think that there are a lot of people who wish that Mark Kirk would have said that more often. A lot of Donald Trump voters who are like, hell yeah, but I still don't think a Donald Trump voter votes for Mark Kirk, and I don't think a Mark Kirk voter votes for Donald Trump.
We got to leave it there. You can always vote to hear Ben Yount right here Tuesdays with us on the Morning Meeting. Ben, thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks, Ben.
Have fun, boys. We'll see you.
We'll wrap it up next on the Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's the Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
Thanks to Ben Yount again for joining us here on the Morning Meeting. That is going to wrap it up for us. Coming up tomorrow, Aiken or Aiken?
Oh!
Travis Aiken.
Yes.
Tomorrow here on the Morning Meeting. And more, obviously.
All right. There was plenty of stuff we didn't even get to with Ben.
No, go ahead and hit the high notes real quick.
Voting registration reform. Ben talked about that Trump will bring new voters to it, but Governor Rauner vetoed the voter registration reform. Is voter registration reform in the eye of the ground gamer? That I think Ben could have gone for 10 minutes on.
It was certainly good stuff, and it's things that we'll get to as we continue to count down to the general right here on the Morning Meeting.
Morning Meeting adjourned. Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.